بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا وعظيمنا وحبيب قلوبنا وشفيع نفوسنا أبي القاسم محمد. اللهم صل على محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين وأصحابه الغر الميامين. الحمد لله الذي جعلنا من المتمسكين بولاية سيدي ومولاي علي بن أبي طالب.
اللهم صل على.
الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا، وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. أما بعد، يقول الله في كتابه الكريم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: ولا يأتونك بمثل إلا جئناك بالحق وأحسن تفسيرا. The first of our salawat in honor of Rasulullah Muhammad صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد.
The second in honor of Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib. The third with your loudest voices in honor of the Imam of our time, Imam Sahib al-Asr wal-Zaman.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد.
Respected scholars, brothers and sisters, Salaamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. The science of tafsir is without a doubt one of the most fascinating sciences amongst the Quranic sciences, and is a science that requires a thorough analysis. For without a doubt, understanding the meaning and the history and the development of tafsir of the Quran is vital in our understanding of the Quran as a whole. Many times when people read the Quran, the first question they ask about any of the verses of the Quran is, what is the tafsir of that verse? The idea is that they seek to have a better understanding of that particular verse. They seek to have a better idea of why that verse was revealed and the meaning behind that verse. Therefore, you find that arguably one of the most important acts in maintaining our relationship with the Quran and not abandoning the Quran is to get to grips with an understanding of the tafsir of the Qur'an. That's why when you hear the names of many of the great ulama of Ahlul Sunnah and of the Shia, you'll find that many of them achieved their greatness through their dedication to the Qur'an. When you hear the names of the likes of Zamakhshari, or the likes of Tabari, or the likes of Fakhr al-Razi, or the likes of Tusi or Tabrasi, or the likes of Tabatabai or Shirazi, when you hear these names, many of these achieved their greatness through their dedication to the Holy Qur'an. They wanted to give as much as they could in order for us to be able to understand what exactly Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala intended when He was speaking to us through the Qur'an. Therefore, the area of tafsir, without a doubt, is an area which was of the utmost importance even from the time of our Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. As in, even from the time of our Holy Prophet, you find that there was an emphasis on making sure that the likes of Amir al-Mu'mineen, the likes of Ibn Abbas, they were firmly instilled into loving, understanding the meaning of the Qur'an. Indeed, there were centers of tafsir which were established all over the Islamic State, even within 30, 40 years of the death of Rasulullah. If you went to Basra, you see Abu Musa al-Ash'ari. If you went to Kufa, you see Abdullah ibn Mas'ud. If you went to Damascus, you'd see the likes of Abu Darda, or you'd see the likes of Ubay ibn Ka'ab. Therefore, you found that these schools of tafsir would have companions whose role it would be to explain the meaning of a verse of the Qur'an, as in there's no point looking at the Qur'an without pondering on the meaning of the ayah. these companions' role would be to try and explain the meaning. Even further than that, the tabi'een and the taba-tabi'een, the generations after the companions, you found that they focused on tafsir a great amount. The likes of Sa'id ibn Jubair, the likes of Sa'id ibn al-Musayyib, the likes of Mujahid ibn Jabbar, many of these would focus on the tafsir of the Holy Quran. However, if you were to ask many of the followers of Ahlul Bayt, what do you know about the development of the tafsir of the Holy Quran? About the history of the tafsir of the Quran? About who could do tafsir of the Quran? About what are the prerequisites for the tafsir of the Quran? You find that many of the followers of Ahlul Bayt are uncertain. Indeed, would you believe that there are certain followers of Ahlul Bayt who go through a whole lifetime without once having read a book of the tafsir of the Quran? There are some followers of Ahlul Bayt in the world today. If you ask him, have you read Al-Misan of Taba-Taba'i? Have you read Majma' al-Bayan of Tabrasi? Have you read Al-Tibyan of Shaykh al-Tusi? Have you read Al-Amthal of Shaykh Nasir Makarim Shirazi and the other scholars who worked with him? Many of them will turn around and say, to tell you the truth, we don't even know of many of these names. Then how do we expect on the Day of Judgment the Qur'an to speak for us when we've neglected the Qur'an? On the Day of Judgment, if I haven't read a single book of tafsir of the Qur'an, how can I be ready to go for the grave tonight when I did not bother to open up the books of tafsir? Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen. Books like, for example, Al-Amthal of Sheikh Nasir Makarim, for example, or Al-Mizan of Allama Taba-Taba'i. You have portions of them in English now. Even if a person is not able to read the Arabic, then at least make an effort to go to the world of tafsir in English. Because this should be a resolution when it comes to the Quran. Therefore tonight, let's in this final analysis, examine the science of tafsir of the Quran and understand its developments in order that we can go and swim in the world of tafsir from later tonight and for the rest of our life, inshallah. And I'd like to examine the following stages. Number one, what's the meaning of the word tafsir? And what are the two definitions that are normally given? Number two, what's the difference between tafsir and ta'wil? And why is it sometimes that they are used synonymously and sometimes they are used anonymously? Number three, who is it that's able to do ta'wil according to the Quran? And what's the difference of tafsir bil-ra'i versus tafsir bil-ma'thur? Number four, what's the prerequisites of tafsir of the Holy Quran? And how important is the idea of syntax, morphology, and areas such as rhetoric and etymology when it comes to understanding the Quran? Number five, what are the most famous works of tafsir? And how did certain tafsir have a leaning towards the mystical, the theological, or even the legal? Number six, do we take every tafsir of the school of Ahlul Bayt as being 100% accurate? Or is there a possibility that there are certain tafsir where you still have a question on certain traditions? And number seven, what did the Holy Prophet say? That on the Day of Judgment, three of them will complain about the way they were treated. And how does that affect us in our life today? Let's examine this and seek to dissect the topic in complete depth. When you come to the word tafsir, obviously from the beginning someone asks, what's the meaning of the word tafsir? The first opinion, according to Ibn Mandur, is that tafsir means to explain something clearly. In which way? He looks at the root of the word tafsir. And what does he say? He says, if you want to understand the root of the word tafsir, then you can understand it in which way? In looking at the idea of symptomatology. What does he mean by this? Imagine you're a physician. You want to see if there's a disease in the urine, yes? So you want to make sure that this person, do they have a disease? So you're going to look at the urine and you're going to inspect whether there's a disease or not. Fasara means what? The act of looking at that urine, yes? So the act of looking at that urine to diagnose whether there's a disease or no is fasara. The mufassir is the physician who's undertaking the act. The tafsira is the urine itself, the sample. The aim of all three is what? Is to get the meaning behind whether there is a disease in that person's life, correct or no? Therefore, Ibn Mandur said, the origin of the word tafsir comes from the word safara, meaning what? He says it comes from the word safara and the idea that you're looking for the deeper meaning in something. He gives the example of the physician. He said the physician, when he takes some urine and he looks within the urine, what's he trying to do? He's trying to see the meaning of whether there is a disease to be diagnosed there or no. Therefore, you found the idea was that tafsir means I'm looking for a meaning. Something which is unknown, I'm trying to unravel it and look for it. As in, you find Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Quran saying what? He says clearly that when you come to Surah 25, yes? Verse number 33. وَلَا يَأْتُونَكَ بِمَثَلٍ إِلَّا جِئْنَاكَ بِالْحَقِّ وَأَحْسَنَ تَفْسِيرًا. Whenever they bring you an example, we bring the truth and make clear the explanation and meaning. When Surah 25 verse 33 uses the word tafsir, it uses it in the idea that the meaning is made clear. وَلَا يَأْتُونَكَ what? بِمَثَلٍ إِلَّا جِئْنَاكَ بِالْحَقِّ وَأَحْسَنَ تَفْسِيرًا. In other words, if someone says that tafsir means I'm looking for the meaning, in which way? For example, if I look at an ayah in the Quran, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَقِيمُوا الصَّلَاةِ. O you who believe, establish salah. That when I'm looking for the meaning of salah, the tafsir will tell me, salah is an act which involves what? Which involves standing, prostrating, bowing, doing dua. The tafsir therefore has done what? The tafsir has diagnosed the symptoms, has looked deep in and found a meaning. If I look at an ayah like zakat, it says, أَقِيمُ الصَّلَاةُ وَآتُ الزَّكَاةُ. I want to look for the tafsir of zakah. What am I doing? I'm diagnosing zakah. I want to know what's the meaning of zakah. So when I look at the diagnosis of zakah, I'm seeing the symptoms. I find that the answer is 2.5% has to be paid on a certain number of goods. Therefore, the first meaning of tafsir, according to Ibn Mandur, was what? Ibn Mandur said, tafsir from the word fasara, that a person is looking for what? A person is looking for the meaning. Jurjani differed with Ibn Mandur. Jurjani said, tafsir doesn't mean looking at the meaning. Jurjani said that tafsir means what? He said tafsir means to disclose or unveil something. Please focus on this idea. He says rather than Ibn Mandur's root meaning of tafsir being what? Fasara. He said that the root meaning of tafsir is safar. And that safar means the idea of unveiling something. What do we mean? You see, for example now in Arabic, when you say someone is gone on safar, what does that mean? Someone's gone on a journey, yes? Someone has traveled. He says that here, what does the word tafsir come from? Safar. When you travel, you unveil your real morals. Correct or no? Didn't Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen used to say, if you want to know someone, travel with them. Correct? Then you'll know the type of person they are. Why? You find Jurjani saying, if you travel with someone, yes, what happens? Safar means that you travel to unveil their morals and your morals. He said, therefore, the word tafsir comes from the idea of unveiling or disclosing. Let me give you another example. In the Arabic language, if someone doesn't wear hijab, what do they call her? Safira, correct? Either you would call her Sufur or you call her Safira. Safira means what? Safira means a lady who's unveiled or disclosed her hair, correct or no? As in, a lady in Islam is not meant to disclose her hair to those who are not mahram to her. If she discloses her hair, unveils her hair to those who are not mahram to her, then what do they call her in Arabic? They call her safira. Jurjani said that if you look at the word safar or the word safira, both of them indicate an unveiling of something. Therefore, he said when you come to the word tafsir, what does tafsir mean? He said, tafsir means the idea of unveiling, that there's an ayah in the Quran which otherwise looks plain. When you do tafsir, you unveil the meaning of the ayah. All of a sudden, you disclose all the information of the ayah. Therefore, he said, when Allah talks of tafsir, he didn't mean you look for the meaning. He said, the meaning is disclosed towards you. These were the two opinions. Let me give you an example. What does he mean? When I read the ayah in the Quran, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, إِنَّمَا يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ لِيُذْبَ عَنْكُمُ الرِّجْسَ أَهْلَ الْبَيْتِ وَيُطَهِّرَكُمْ تَطْهِيرًا. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. He said that if you look, for example, at the idea that you're unveiling, he said that ayah, if you look at it, you wouldn't know the meaning simply by looking at it. When you unveil its meaning, you find out that it's revealed about the Holy Prophet, about Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen, about Fatima al-Zahra, about Imam al-Hassan, about Imam al-Hussein. What have you done? He said, you haven't done tafsir in the meaning of look for the meaning. He said, you've done tafsir in the idea of unveiling something which otherwise was disclosed. Therefore, the scholars, their central understanding of tafsir was what? The idea that I'm looking for meaning by unraveling, by disclosing what is otherwise unveiled. And that's why the question arises on this front. Rasulullah himself, did he do tafsir or no? This is a very hotly contested issue. Why? Because you find that not all the schools in Islam believe that Rasulullah necessarily done tafsir of the whole Quran. Imagine, the Holy Prophet has come to Arabia. He's come with a book, 6,500 verses. When he's come with this book, does he have time to give tafsir of every ayah of the Quran or no? Suyuti, what did he say? Suyuti said no. He said there's no way he'd have time to give every tafsir of every ayah of the Quran. Yes, there's a few ayahs, he may say, this is their tafsir. But no, otherwise he doesn't have the time. Jibreel gives him a whole surah. How's he going to have the time to be able to explain every single ayah of the Quran? And you know what Suyuti uses as backup? Suyuti says, we only have 200 narrations. Please listen to this point carefully. Suyuti says, we only have 200 narrations about tafsir of ayat of the Holy Quran. If Rasulullah had done tafsir of the whole Quran, then Rasulullah, we should have 6,500 narrations about each of the ayat of the Quran. Therefore, Suyuti believed that Rasulullah could not have done tafsir of the Holy Quran. The school of Ahlul Bayt differs completely with that opinion. The school of Ahlul Bayt says, no, Rasulullah done tafsir of every ayah of the Quran. Because his role was to give ta'aleem of the kitab. Correct or no? هو الذي بعث في الأميين رسولا منهم يتلو عليهم آياته ويزكيهم ويعلمهم الكتاب والحكمة. His role is to teach the book and the wisdom from the book. Suyuti says, no way Rasulullah could have unraveled all the meanings of tafsir. He said, why? He said, because there's not enough narrations. We reply by saying, firstly, Allah said that the role of Rasulullah is to explain every single ayah of the Quran to the people. As imagine now, I come to all of you here, and I say that I'm doing a course, yes, I'm doing a course on Islamic history. And I'm going to cover every area of Islamic history, and you know what? My course will give you guidance until the day of judgment. But then week 3 I don't turn up, week 9 I don't turn up, week 14 I don't turn up, week 15 I don't turn up. Can I have truly put a hujjah on all of you on the day of judgment that I taught you everything? No, I can't. Because you'll turn around to me and you'll say, Sayyid Ammar, hold on. You said that this history course of yours was a guide. You didn't turn up tonight 9, you didn't turn up tonight 14, you didn't turn up tonight 16. For someone to say that Rasulullah did not unravel or disclose the meaning of every ayah of the Quran, that leaves us in a problem. Why? Because then it's open for everyone to come and give their opinions. In the school of Ahlul Bayt, we reply by saying, no, Rasulullah, without a doubt, he explained every ayah of the Quran. What's our proofs? The first proof is Abdullah bin Mas'ud himself saying that whenever ayat would be revealed from Allah to the Prophet, Rasulullah would explain each ayah to us. Abdullah bin Mas'ud says that the ayat of the Quran, you know the ayat of the Quran, they don't all come down like in 700 verses, as in Rasulullah doesn't stay in the mountain with Jibreel for, you know, 6 hours taking ayat in. Normally if they come between 5 to 10 ayat at a go. It's very rare that you have like Surah Yusuf where you might have, wow, one whole surah revealed straight away. Normally it's 5 to 10 ayahs. Abdullah bin Mas'ud would say, we would never leave Rasulullah except that Rasulullah would tell us the ayahs, we would memorize the verses, and then he'd explain to us verse after verse. Otherwise, if I give someone an ayah, and they read the ayah in the wrong way, I'm going to have havoc in this religion. Everyone's going to have their own interpretation. Our first proof is that the Sahaba themselves would say, Rasulullah, he would give tafsir of every ayah. Secondly, when Suyuti says, please focus on this point, when Suyuti says we only have 200 ayat, which have got tafsir from Rasulullah, that means Rasulullah could not have done the whole tafsir. We reply, yes, the moment you neglected the Imams of Ahlul Bayt, you were only left with 200 ayat of the Quran. Yes? As in the Imams of Ahlul Bayt were walking Qurans on earth. If you held on to the ayat, which the Imams of Ahlul Bayt had heard from their father, from their father, from their father, from their father, from Rasulullah. Don't we say Imam al-Rida says, I heard from Imam al-Kadhim, from Imam al-Sadiq, from Imam al-Baqir, from Imam Zain al-Abidin, from Imam al-Hussein, from Imam al-Hassan, from Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen, from Rasulullah, from Jibra'il, from the heavens. We have what's known as a silsila al-Dhahabiyya, the golden chain of Imam al-Rida alayhi salam. Do you know the Imams of Ahlul Bayt have got over 4,000 narrations of ayat of the Quran and Rasulullah's tafsir? Sayyid Muhammad al-Bahrani, the grandson of the author of Tafsir al-Burhan, Sayyid Muhammad al-Bahrani is at the moment collecting every single ayah of the Quran and its tafsir from Rasulullah. Every ayah. But how does he get them? For example, Imam al-Sadiq says, I heard from Imam al-Baqir, who heard from Imam Zain al-Abidin, who heard from Imam al-Hussein, who heard from Imam Amir al-Mu'minin. You think when Rasulullah says, I am the city of knowledge and Ali is its gate. Or when Rasulullah says, or Imam Ali says, 1,000 doors opened for me which opened another 1,000 doors. What was he saying? He was saying every ayah of the Quran. Rasulullah explained to us, there was not an ayah which he neglected. For someone to come and say, as in even Ibn Taymiyyah agrees with us, and that's very rare for me to say on the minbar, even Ibn Taymiyyah agrees with us and he says, that Rasulullah explained every ayah of the Quran. Whereas Suyuti and others, in their own humble opinion I'm sure, Suyuti and others are of the opinion that no, not every ayah. And the tafasir of Rasulullah with us until today. Let me give you an example. How many of you have read the verse, Surah 3 verse 97? وَلِلَّهِ عَلَى النَّاسِ حِجُّ الْبَيْتِ Yes? من استطاع إليه سبيلا. It is incumbent, obligatory, that Allah has given you an order on everyone of mankind to perform Hajj, whoever has the provisions for Hajj. When the ayah says whoever has the provisions for Hajj, I need to go to Rasulullah, correct or no? When I go to Rasulullah, until today in our books of tafsir, we have a clear explanation from Rasulullah. Rasulullah saying the provisions of Hajj is what? Please focus on this. Is that you could afford to go to Hajj and your family will not be in debt if you go to Hajj. Yes? There are some people, they go to Hajj, he borrows from about 15 different people. Yes? His family have no food at home. His family have no drink at home. And people look at him and they say to him, Hajji, how are you? Hajj, how are you? Baba, forget being a Hajji, leave Hajj. If you're gonna leave your family in such a dire strait, why are you going to Hajj? You have someone here who owns half of the Shia world money, and people look at him and say, Hajj, how are you? Nice to see you. But the people like this shouldn't go to Hajj, they should stay far away from the Kaaba. But Rasulullah, when you look at him, what does Rasulullah say? The tafsir of this ayah from that time, we have Rasulullah explaining that to go to Hajj, you have to have the provisions where you will not end up in debt if you come back from Hajj. Allah doesn't want you coming to him and you neglect your family's duties, you neglect your family's happiness. Therefore, tafsir of the Quran without a doubt. Rasulullah had explained every ayah of the Quran. Because some people will come to you today and say, are you sure the Prophet explained every ayah? For all we know, he neglected some ayat. Every ayah, he explained, and Imam took it from him. Someone asks that when he explains every ayah, we sometimes hear that he did tafsir of the Quran. At other times we hear he did ta'wil. How many of you have heard this? Sometimes someone says to you, what's the ta'wil of this ayah? Sometimes someone says to you, what's the tafsir of this ayah? What's the difference between tafsir and ta'wil? As in, if Rasulullah done tafsir, where did the idea of ta'wil come from? You see, there's no contradiction. You could do ta'wil without denying tafsir. What do I mean? Tafsir gives you the apparent meaning of the ayah. Ta'wil gives you the possible deeper meanings which Allah intended for an ayah. Tafsir can tell me what? Tafsir can give me an apparent meaning, whereas Ta'wil gives me a deeper meaning. There is nothing wrong in the school of Ahlul Bayt with Ta'wil. Who can tell me in the Quran? Has there been instances of Ta'wil in the Quran, the usage of the word Ta'wil? Ta'wil means what? Ta'wil means that I can look for the deeper meaning of an ayah. You know, the Ahlul Bayt say there are 7 layers of meaning for one ayah of the Quran. What, you think there's only one layer of meaning? How many times have you looked at the Quran and you thought to yourself, you know what, I think this verse has got much more of a meaning than the translation gives it. I think this verse has a more profound meaning. Ta'wil is when a person looks for the more profound, the deeper explanation. In the Quran, we see Ta'wil many times. You see, for example, Khidr with Musa. When Musa keeps telling Khidr, can I come with you on the journey? Can I come with you on the journey? And when Khidr takes Musa on the journey, what does he do? When Khidr takes Musa with him on the journey, he first does what? He makes the hole in the boat, correct? Then secondly, what does he do? He kills that young boy. And then thirdly, what does he do? Repair the wall, correct? Now when Musa asks him, he says to him, can you give me the meaning of all of this? The first time when he asked him, can you give me the meaning? The reply was, you don't have the patience to bear the meaning. The second time, you don't have the patience to bear the meaning. The third time, he said to him, سَأُنَبِّئُكَ بِتَأْوِيلْ مَا لَمْ تَسْتَطِعْ عَلَيْهِ صَبْرًا. I'll give you the ta'wil. Why doesn't he say سَأُنَبِّئُكَ بِتَفْسِيرْ? Why say سَأُنَبِّئُكَ بِتَأْوِيلْ? Because tafsir, Musa can see the apparent meaning. Musa can see a young boy has been killed. A wall has been repaired. A boat has had a hole made in it. But Khidr says, سَأُنَبِّئُكَ بِتَأْوِيلَ. I will give you not the apparent meaning. I'm going to give you the deeper meaning, correct? Nabi Yusuf in the Quran, when he interprets the dreams, when he meets his father later on, he says, my father, this is the ta'wil of the dream that I saw when I was younger. Yes? Ta'wil means what? Ta'wil is the idea that I look for the deeper meaning of an ayah of the Holy Quran. I go beyond the layers and the levels. Ta'wil, can it be done? Yes. Someone says, give me an example in the Quran of ta'wil. As in, give me an example of an ayah which will have more layers, more meaning. If you look at an ayah, for example, like, فَلْيَنْظُرِ الْإِنسَانُ إِلَىٰ طَعَامِهِ. Surah 80 verse 24. Ahlul Bayt, what they done beautifully for us, and only they could do, is provide you tafsir and ta'wil. In which way? If I look at that ayah, Surah 80 verse 24, فَلْيَنْظُرِ الْإِنسَانُ إِلَىٰ طَعَامِهِ. Let mankind have a look at his food. I ask all of you today. Apparently, what does the ayah look like? Apparently. فَلْيَنْظُرِ الْإِنسَانُ إِلَىٰ طَعَامِهِ. What does that look like? Let man look at his food properly, yes? Apparently, what does it look like? That I shouldn't eat haram food. Correct or no? Correct or no? Is that not the tafsir? فَلْيَنْظُرِ الْإِنسَانُ إِلَىٰ طَعَامِهِ. Let mankind look at his food. The tafsir would be, stay away from haram. Don't eat haram. Haram food is not acceptable. Try and purify your soul away from haram. You know, sometimes in our communities today, you have many people until today in the school of Ahlul Bayt who eat kosher. You look at them, you're like, excuse me, why are you eating kosher? I said, food of Ahlul Kitab. What do you mean food of Ahlul Kitab? Said, yes, but Ahlul Kitab, they eat, you know, they believe in Allah, we believe in Allah, so if I see a Christian shop or a Jewish shop, at the end of the day, they're people of the book, I can eat. Who told you can eat? Said, oh, my brother's from another school in Islam. No, you're a follower of Ahlul Bayt, not another school in Islam. Do you know how many people outside the school of Ahlul Bayt eat kosher every day? Every day. Do you think that doesn't have an effect on the soul? Do you know how many people of the followers of Ahlul Bayt go to Europe, for example, McDonald's, Burger King, because this guy's used to them in his Khaliji countries, yes? In Dubai, or in Kuwait, or in Saudi, he's used to them being halal. So when he gets there to London, for example, you see him eating the Big Mac, yes? So, Habibi, what are you doing eating the Big Mac? And sometimes I say it out of jealousy. He says, say to him, Habibi, what are you doing eating the Big Mac, correct or no? You see that the person replies by saying, no, you don't understand. I'm like, okay, explain to me, what don't I understand? He's like, in our countries, it's halal. And I had this look around London. What of London makes you think it's halal, yes? What of London makes you think it's halal? I say, okay, not London. The person looks at me and says, okay, not London, I understand, it's not. But the Quran says the ta'am of Ahlul Kitab has been made halal.
And therefore you find so many of the other schools in Islam come and eat Big Mac, Whopper, all of these, it's normal. Let alone there's a third category of people, they're the funniest. Just before he begins, there's a Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I tell you, I wish it was that easy. All of us wouldn't be in the mosque now, we'd be having Whoppers 24/7, true? There wouldn't be a single person in the mosque. Every single person would be like, Bismillah, 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 Bismillah. Or as some of our mothers do, I'm sure many of you have seen, when your mother, you tell her there's some trouble in your life or you have problems, and she'll suddenly blow on top of you, yes? See, many times you'll see our mothers will be like, Summon bukmon amyon, and you're like, Mom, hold on a minute, why are you blowing so much on me? Why are you breathing like that? Oh no, I'm letting the verse flow. If you're letting the verse flow, then I should do that with the Big Mac as well. Because if the eye of the Quran can do that, then I'm going to do that with the Big Mac. Bring me a Big Mac and I'm going to be like, phew, the whole over the Big Mac. The appearance of that eye of the Quran, فَلْيَنْظُرِ الْإِنسَانُ إِلَىٰ طَعَامِهِ. Let man have a look at his ta'am. Let man have a look in the school of Al-Bayt. When the ayah said ta'am of Ahlul Kitab, Imam Sadiq said it means the herbs and the vegetables of Ahlul Kitab, not their meat. Baba, the meat of Ahlul Kitab doesn't face the Kaaba. Do you know we believe in the spirituality of the food as much as the physical aspect, correct? Yes, Ahlul Bayt are very lenient. If you don't know if something is, for example, who the cook is and so on, they've given us much leniency. But there's a standard principle. What's the standard principle? That mankind, have a look at what you're eating. Think about what you're eating. That's the apparent. The ta'wil of this, Imam al-Sadiq says, is what? Have a look where you're getting your knowledge from. Hold on, say Imam al-Sadiq. It says, فَلْيَنْظُرُ الْإِنسَانُ إِلَىٰ طَعَامِهِ. He said, yes, but there's food for the physical and there's food for thought. Correct or no? When someone says something nice to you, don't you say, you know what, that's given me food for thought? That's made me think? Say, what do you mean food for thought? You've just what, eaten his words? No. Metaphorically, you have to think about where the knowledge comes from, correct or no? Imam al-Sadiq was asked, what's the tafsir of this ayah? He said, you watch what you eat. What's the ta'wil of this ayah? And that ta'wil can only be given to those who Allah has given it to. It's not just anyone who can come and give you ta'wil of an ayah. Imam al-Sadiq looked at the person, he said, have a look at the knowledge where you're getting it from. Correct or no? As in today, every Tom, Dick and Harry is sitting on the minbar of Ahlul Bayt. Correct or no? Everybody is being allowed to sit on the minbar. As in, I've heard certain people, and we give them benefit of the doubt,